So today's daf is Pei Aleph. We're going to begin. Today's daf is Pei Beis. We're going to begin at the bottom of Pei Aleph on the Beis. A lot to do today. So Amar Rav Yehuda b'Medar Amor. So remember again, this is now Pei Aleph on the Beis. 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Wow, 14 lines up from the bottom. Did we have shir yesterday? Yeah, sleeping. All right. So now, remember again, the Mishnah we learned that Rabbi Yehuda said that when can you go ahead and make an eruv for someone without their consent or without their knowledge? That only applies in eruv chatzeros, right? But I should say it differently. When can't you make an eruv for a person without their consent or their knowledge? That is true in an eruv tumin. Because it's the Erev Tumen, Lemaisa, again, there is a downside in that a person does lose a certain amount of mobility. Therefore, Lemaisa, you need their consent. When it comes, let's say, to Erev Chatzeros, where the assumption is there's no downside to that particular Erev, then Lemaisa, again, it could do without a person's consent. So the Gemara says, Man Sha'ar Ka, So the Amr Rav Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, Halachik Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda, Bosa, it was the Amora, said in the name of Shmuel, that the Halacha follows Rav Yehuda, the Tana. Not only that, and therefore I will say again that the only time you can't make an Erev on behalf of someone without their knowledge is an Erev Tchumen, where there's a downside. But any other Erev mechanism for which there is no downside, right? There's nothing to be lost, and the Maisa, you could do that for someone even without their knowledge or consent, based on the idea of Zachana Adam Shalom Befanov. So the Gemara says, Velo Oath, Ela Komakom Shoshana Rav Yehuda Be'erev in Halacha Kimosom. Furthermore, any time that Rav Yehuda is quoted in Erevin, the Halacha follows him. Amali Rav Chana Bagarata, Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Mishmuel. So Rav Chana Bagarata is Baghdad. So Rav Chana of Baghdad said, according to Rav Yehuda, his name is Shmuel, Afilu Mavui Shenitlu Korosav Olachayev. Does that mean even in the case, that we follow Rav Yehuda, even in the case of a Mavui, where the Lechi or Koro was taken down on Shabbos? I will say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Amar Shmuel, Afilu Mavish Nitlu Korosov, Bishabis the Mekel Bar Rabbi Huda Parakal Gagos, the Amar Mutarla Osa Shabbos. So we'll say, for example, Rabbi Huda's position in that case is that as long as the Mavoi began Shabbos with a Lechi or a Korah, then what? That Lechi or Korah permits the Mavoi for the remainder of Shabbos, even if it was removed. So now Rav Chana Bagarata asked, when we said that Allah Chavaz Rabbi Huda and Erevin, does that apply even in the case of the Lechi or Korah that was removed? Amar Lehi said to him, no. I told you that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda in cases of Erevin, but not in cases of Mechitzos. As the Lechin Karabosa is a din in Mechitza, not a din in Erev. When we say that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda Rabosa, the assumption that seems to infer that what? That somebody argues on Rabbi Yehuda. But Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, right? But we learned elsewhere that according to Rabbi Yehoshua, that any time that Rabbi Yehuda says in the Mishnah, Emasai, or Bameh, Rabbi will say, now remember, Emasai means when, or Bameh means how, that whenever you see Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah make such a word, he's not coming to argue. Rather, what is he coming to do? He's coming to clarify the position of the Chachamim as stated in the Mishnah. So, for example, Rabbi Osai over here, if you look at it, well, you don't have to look, but I'll tell you in our Mishnah. So, the Mishnah reads, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Bameh Dvarim Amurim. When is this? So, now remember, the previous statement in the Mishnah was, She'ein Ma'arvin La'adam Elamidaito. You can only make an error for a person with their knowledge and consent. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, Bameh Dvarim Amurim. When is this so? So, now the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Levi says that any time you have a Mishnah and Rabbi Huda says Bameh or Imasai, Rabbi Huda is not coming to argue. Rather, what is Rabbi Huda coming to do? He's coming to clarify. So therefore, according to that logic, the way you would read this Mishnah would be, the Tanakhama says that you can't make an error for someone without their consent. Bameh, Drama Murim, when does the Tanakhama say what he says? That's in the case of Erev Tchumen. But in everything else, you're supposed to see the Gemara says, V'ha'an Antinan. But we learned, Mitosfu Alehen, Mosif Umizake, the Tzarech Lodio. But yet, we learned, Rav also in the previous Mishnah, that what? That if additional residents were added on into the Chatzer, then what? You have, most remember we had this case before, this is where you went ahead and you set aside a barrel of food for the residents of the Chatzer, for the Erev Chatzeros, or the Sheet of Muvos. and water. She didn't move out, that's actually what he was dealing with. And now new people move in. That you have to go ahead and add on additional food. Vitzarach lodia, and you have to tell them. Rish Rabosei seems to indicate what, that according to the Tana Kama, you would have to go ahead and tell a person even about a shidduch mavoz, which according to what Rabbi Yehuda just said before, you should not have to do. So we see, therefore, that it is a machlokus between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yehuda. Hasam b'chatzer shevein shtei mavoz. No, that's a different case. What's the case over there? The case over there is a chatzer in between two mavoz. So we'll say again, to make a shidduch in that kind of situation actually is a chov. Why? Because remember, if you live in a chatzer in between two mavois, you have to choose a mavo. You can't have a shitof in both. So going ahead and making a shitof or putting someone on a shitof actually has a detrimental side effect, which is they lose out the ability to go ahead and join in the other one. So even in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that you require their prior consent. V'hamarav shizvi amarav chista zos omeres chalukin alav chaver Rabbi Yehuda. This tells us that Rabbi Yehuda's friends argue on him. Elo, top of Pebes. So we'll say, so which one is this? Now we have a stira, because according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, so it sounds like whenever Rabbi Yehuda says Amosai and Bameh, so that's Rabbi Yehuda is not coming to argue, Rabbi Yehuda is coming to clarify. Yet, based on the way the previous Mishnah read, it seems to indicate that the Chum do argue on Rabbi Yehuda. To which the Gemara says, Gavra agavra karamis, there's an argument on the position, it's Machlokes, and what the position of Rabbi Yehuda is, Mar Savar Pligi, Umar Savar Lo Pligi, one opinion holds, and maybe Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, right, says that Rabbi Yehuda is arguing on the Tana Kama, and Rabbi Yehoshua Stam holds that Rabbi Yehuda is not arguing on the Tana Kama. So we'll say just a fundamental dispute as to how to understand the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Is he coming to clarify, or is he coming to argue? Gufa, I'm Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, komakom sh'am Rabbi Yehuda in Masai u'bameh, the Mishnah Seinu, eino ala lefar shivrei chacham. So we'll say now the Gemara goes back and visits Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi's principle. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi wanted to say that any time you see in a Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda says the words Emasai u'bameh, he's not coming to argue on the Tana Kama, but rather what? He's coming to clarify the words of the Chachamim. Rabbi Yochanan says no. Emasai lefarish. Yes, I agree with you. When you see the word Emasai, that means that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to explain the words of the Tana Kama. However, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Emasai lefarish u'bameh lachlok. But if when you see the word bameh, that means Rabbi Yehuda is coming to disagree. The Emasai lefarishu, is that true that Emasai comes to explain the Tana Kama's opinion? For Hatzanan, but we learned it was an interesting Mishnah. We learned in the Mishnah, the Elohim apostlen. These are the people who are possible to give edus. Who are they? Hamesachik b'kuvya, a professional gambler. Melave b'ribis, one who lends with interest. Love Rivers. Mafriche Yonim. We'll say dove racers. Rashi says, Mafriche Yonim. Itekadme Yoncha Leoni. Literally, if my dove beats your dove. Right? Or if your dove beats my dove. Right? So professional dove racers. Vesochere Shavis. And people who do commerce with Shemitah produce. Right? You're not allowed to do business with Shemitah produce. All these people are Pasal Le'edos. So Pasal Le'edos. Okay? So look at Rashi for just a moment. We'll say, what's the common denominator among all of these people? Sochari Shavis, Terachmana Amar Li Achla, because the Torah says you're allowed to eat Shavis, Shemitah produce, but you can't sell. Below the Schora, we'll say, so what's the common denominator? Listen to this, very profound. Bezet Shechomet Mamon, La'avor Aveira Al Hamamon, Roshahu, Va'atora Amra Al Tashes Rasha Eid. So we'll say, listen to this, because the common denominator of all these people is they all have a strong desire for money and would be ready to violate an Avera in order to make a gain. Someone who's willing to do that is categorized ultimately as a Rasha. And someone who's categorized as a Rasha is not permitted to be a witness. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, so also comes, now again, remember this is not our topic, so why is this here? Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Emasai. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, when is this true? Bizman she'en lo umnos elohu. We'll say this is specifically referring to the Mesachik B'kuvya. The truth is, actually, I take that back. It could be referring to any of these cases. The Gemara later on in Sanhedrin discussed the Mesachik B'kuvya separately. But Rabbi Yehuda says, when is this true? When he doesn't have another profession except for these things mentioned in this Mishnah. Aval yeshlo umnos shelo hi hari zekasher. But if a person kind of just, I race pigeons on the weekends, right? The Reish does on the weekends. I don't really do this as my full-time job. Right? But again, I have a job, I do something, but these are all just hobbies. So then Rabbi Yehuda says such a person is kasher le'edus. Kasher. The Tani Allah Braisa, and yet the Braisa says Bachamim Omrim, Bein Shiesh lo Omnus Elohi, Ubein Shiesh lo Omnus Shalohi, Harez Apostle. But yet the Braisa says, the Chachamim say, whether you have another profession or you don't have another profession, you are Apostle. So we'll say, what do you see from here? That even though Rabbi Yehuda is using the word Emasai, which we said before, what means what? Coming to clarify the position of the Tanakhama, we see it's not true. He's actually disputing the position of the Tanakhama. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, again, all these people are only possible if this is their sole occupation. Whereas according to the Tanakhama, if they have a regular job, and this is just a side hobby, according to Rabbi Yehuda, they're not possible this. And according to the Tanakhama, it's not true. Even if they have a real job, but this is what they do. This is the apostle Eidus. So you see that even when it says Emasai, Emasai is not Rabbi Yehuda coming to clarify. Emasai is Machlokas, to which the Gemara says, Ahid Rabbi Yehuda am Rabbi Tarfoni. So the Gemara says, this Rabbi Yehuda already told us that this was the opinion, this Chachamim that it's quoting over here are not Chachamim, this is Rabbi Tarfon. This Sanya, am Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, li olam ein echad mehen nazir, Lefish in Nazirus Allah Hafla. So we'll say, this is an interesting case. Look at Rashi in Echal Mehen Nazir. Shnaim Shiyoshin. You have two people sitting together. V'ra'u Echad Ba, V'amar Echal Mehen. Hareini Nazir, Shezen Nazir. V'amar Chaveiro Hareini Nazir, Shein Zen Nazir. So we'll say, Reuben and Shimon are sitting together. They're passing the time, right? Some of the ladies walking towards them, and they make the following, I don't call it a bet. I'll say, let me make the following statement. So Reuven says, you know what? If lady, that guy is walking towards us, if Levi's a Nazir, I'm going to be a Nazir. And Shimon says, if Levi's not a Nazir, I'm going to be a Nazir. So Rabbi Tarfon says, such a statement does not affect Nazirus. Meaning, no matter what lady is, neither Reuven and Shimon will become a Nazir. Why? She'en Nazirus ela lahafla. Because Nazirus requires an explicit statement. In order for a Nazirite vow to actualize, it requires an explicit statement of acceptance of Nazirus, unequivocal. The moment that there's the equivocation is the moment that doesn't work. Ama kevan de nesafkele I nazir I lo nazirhu lo meshabid nafshe. We'll say, therefore, what do we see? That as soon as there's any kind of level of doubt, a person does not really commit themselves to being a Nazir. Why is this important for us? Rabbi say, Halkanami, listen to this. Inami, so most of them are we're trying to just follow the progression over here. The Gemara wants to show that Emosai shows that Rabbi Yehuda, that even when Rabbi Yehuda says Emosai, it can still be a machlokes in Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. What's the machlokes? The machlokes is, do you go ahead and disqualify a weekend gambler from going ahead and being an aid? Rabbi Yehuda says no, Chachamim say yes. The Gemara says, no, it's not a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Who are the Chachamim in this case? It's Rabbi Tarfon. Because what does Rabbi Tarfon say? Rabbi Tarfon says that statement number one, Rabbi Tarfon said is that you can't become a nazir through a non-definitive statement, an equivocating statement. Hachinami kevan de lo yada I kani I lo kani lo gamar umakne. So too over here, when it comes to gambling, says Rabbi Tarfon, since a person doesn't know if he's going to succeed or he's not going to succeed, he never fully gives up the rights to his money. I'll say, what does that mean? Rabbi Tarfon holds that essentially nobody gambles to lose. So because of that, Lemaisa, when I gamble and I do lose, I don't fully relinquish my rights to my money. Which means what Rabbi say? That the person who actually claims the earnings is in somewhat violation of what? Of theft. So this is the concept of this is a more general discussion of asmachta lokanya, that sometimes exaggerated statements don't actually have halachic validity. No, so therefore Rabbi Tarfon holds that even the weekend gambler, although he has a day job, since at the end of the day, hopefully at some point in time he's won. If you've won in gambling, then what does that by definition mean? If you've won, then you've been in violation of some level of theft. Once you've been in violation of some level of theft, then by definition, Rabbi Tarfon holds that you're apostle Aegis. So I'll say, but for our purposes over here, just although it's very interesting, but we'll get to it Sanhedrin in a few years, But for our purposes over here, what this ultimately means is that Lemaisa, we can still go with the approach that when the Mishnah says Emosai, that Rabbi Huda is not coming to disagree. Rabbi Huda is simply coming to clarify the position of the Chachamim. Okay, fine. Hadron Allah Cholon. So we'll say just you should know just what does come from that particular sugya is that we do paskin like Rabbi Huda. Namely that you can go ahead and you can make an Erev on somebody's behalf as long as that Erev does not have any kind of downside. So for example, an Erev Chatzerus you can make on someone's behalf, a Shituf Muvaos, assuming that a person doesn't have the option to join one of two Muvaos, but only has the option to join one particular Mavoi, those kind of situations you can do on someone's behalf without their consent. But let's say an Erev Tchumin, where there is a downside, you would require the person's consent. Ketzan Mishtatun B'chupit Tchumin. How do you go ahead and make and participate in the collective Erev Tchumah? So we'll say again, this is now, let's say we all live in a city together, and we all want to go in it. We all want to make an Erev in a particular direction. So we shouldn't all each have to do it individually. How can we make a collective Erev together? So what do you do? So very similar to what we saw in the Sheet of Mavos. Maniach HaSachavis, you go ahead and you take a barrel of food. Va'omer HaRizel L'chol B'nei Irim. This is Tzunabos. So let's say, to keep it easy, I'll be the generous one for today, right? So we all live in the same city. I'm going to go ahead and take a barrel of food, my food, and what do? I give it. I makne it to all of you. I say to all of you, this should be for the residents of my city in Erev Tchumen. Whoever wants to go to a base avel or a base mishnah. The boss says this again. Remember, even though there's no avelos on Shabbos, but people did go to visit mourners on Shabbos. You went. It's not labdav because not that it's a nichum avelu per se. But it's still a mitzvah to console the mourner. So, and this should allow anyone who wants to travel to the Beis Avel or Beis Mishnah. Let's say someone is having Sheva Brachos. Remember, we saw already that often. Well, okay, fine. So we go Sheva Brachos. The Choshi Kivel Alav Miba Odio Mutter. And whoever accepted upon himself this Erev Tchumen. So also remember, this Erev Tchumen. So Erev Tchumen requires consent of the individual. So what it's saying over here is the following. So whoever went ahead and said, okay, I want into that Eruv while it was still day, then the Maisit works. Mishatachshach, however, if you only decide that you want into the Eruv at night, then Aser, why? Shame Arvin Mishatachshach, because we do not create Eruvin at night, says the Gemara. Amar Rav Yosef, Eim Arvin Elo L'Dvar Mitzvah. What says, very interesting. What do we see from this Mishnah Bosai? That you can only make an Erev Tchumen for a mitzvah purpose. It's interesting because it's just, we've never spoken about this before. What can you or can't you make an Erev for? So now comes on Rabbi Yosef, it says only for a Dvar mitzvah. Only for, look at Rashi just a moment. Ein ma'arvin, lo hitiru chachamim latzeis chutz l'tchum. The rabbis did not permit you to leave your tchum, i.e. the Erev, ela l'dvar mitzvah. The only reason you could extend your tchum is for a Dvar mitzvah. So Gemara says, "My kamash on what's the chiddush in that? Tanina, that's what it says in the Mishnah. L'chol mishi yelich lebeis ha'avel or lebeis ha'mishnah." We'll say, "What does the Mishnah say?" The Mishnah says that I set up the era for what? Whoever wants to go and be menachem avol or go to the shever brachos. So ma'od the tamei woman, I thought archa de milsa katani. I might have thought that when the Mishnah says that, we'll say that's just like Mishnah speak. It's just Mishnah speak, you know. So it doesn't literally mean what does the Mishnah say? Whoever wants to I don't know what else. What other example you could use? But the Mishnah is, I'm sorry, dumb racing, right? You only do that on Sundays, right? So now I will say, so whatever the reason is, I might have thought the Mishnah is just using a nice religious example. But lav dafka is limited to that. Kamash malo, no. When the Mishnah says the base of Mishnah, what the Mishnah is explicitly teaching us is the only reason for which you can create an Erev Tchumen is in order to allow you to perform a mitzvah. The Chol Shekibel Alav Ni Ba'olyam. Furthermore, what did the Mishnah say? That the only way the Erev Tchumen works is Harabal Sai, is if L'maisa, I being one of the residents of the city, accept to buy in, so to speak. I understand there's no actual money changing in, but I accept to vest myself in that Erev while it was still day. Shavis Mina learned from this, in Breira. It would seem to be based on, so we'll say there's no Breira, but what is Breira? Breira is retroactive clarification. Breira means, Breira is a halachic mechanism that essentially allows you to make a decision now, and the decision that you make now retroactively clarifies events of the past. So the Gemara says, the fact that you see from here that I have to make my decision about this Erev while it is still day is indicative of the fact that what? That there's no Breira. Because if there was Breira, if there was retroactive clarification, then what should I be able to do? Friday night after my Suda, I decide I want to use that Erev. I should be able to say I won, and then retroactively it turns out that when the person set it up, he had me in mind on Erev Shabbos. So the Gemara says, the Iyesh Breira, Tikali Muslim Afreid, because again, if there was Breira retroactive clarification, then when I decide on Shabbos, was I. The idea is that, remember, what's happening on Erev Shabbos? I'm the guy who's going ahead and setting up the Erev. So I'm putting this barrel, and I say this barrel should serve as an Erev Tumen for all the residents of my city. So we'll say, so what the Gemara is suggesting is, if there was Breira over here, then Friday night after your Suda, when you decide that you know what, I'm going to want to travel to the base Avel, when you make that decision, what happens? What happens? Retroactively, it's clarified that I had you in mind, or that at the time that I made the Erev over the barrel. The fact that that doesn't work indicates that there's no Breira.
Retroactively, I had him. I who accepts it on Shabbos, I'm retroactively accepting it from before Shabbos.
Correct.
It's clarified that I really wanted to accept
correct.
It before Shabbos.
Correct. And therefore, when I went ahead, correct. When I went ahead and I made the Erev, Lemais, again, I gave over the rights to everyone. Everyone is not clarified.
But
when
I have
you
to
accept,
be, but I have
you,
to be Zoche.
Correct. So when you accept, it retroactively is clarified that I had you in mind and you had in mind to Makabal as well. Because remember, it requires two parties here. It requires the Makna. I have to, because if I'm making the Eruv, I have to give you the food and you have to acquire it. I don't have clear das. You don't have clear das.
My only point was that there is no Bereira by the person who is putting the chavis aside, because when he put the chavis aside, according to the Mishnah, he put it aside
for everybody
correct. In the ear. So
correct.
Bereira is coming to the person.
That is correct. Ravashi. So Ravashi says not necessarily. Hodi uhu velo hodi uhu katani. So Ravashi comes along and says no. What does this mean? Hodi uhu. Look at Rashi. Will say hodi uhu mi ba odyom velo odyom mi ba odyom katani. Hodi uhu afa pi shalom nisratze mi ba'odyom v'nisratze mechashecha arminan hulvron. So we'll say this, the Gemara gives an interesting answer. The Gemara says, you're right. What does it mean? What does the Mishnah mean to say? The Mishnah means like this. If I was told about the existence of, I being a resident of the city, was told about the existence of this Erev Tchumen, then as long as I have knowledge of it before Shabbos, then what? Even if I choose to use it on Shabbos, there's a concept of Breira. Constant Breira. So I'll say, again, I found out about it Erev Shabbos, but I didn't make any decisions. Now on Shabbos, I decide that I want to use it. There's retroactive clarification that I actually had in mind to use it already on Erev Shabbos. But if I never even knew about the existence of the Erev until Shabbos, then what, Rabbi Osai? Then in that case, there can be no Breira, because Breira, remember, also, the way that Breira works is there is an event that occurs, but the event is somewhat amorphous, ambiguous, or undefined. And then what Breira says is, later clarity can retroactively devolve upon an earlier event. But that, by definition, requires what? An earlier event. See, if I knew about the existence of the Erev on Erev Shabbos, but didn't make a decision about it, and then on Shabbos I decide, you know what, I want to use that Erev, then that present clarification on Shabbos devolves upon the ambiguous knowledge of Erev Shabbos, and clarifies the ambiguous knowledge. But if I never knew about it on Erev Shabbos, then what? Then there's nothing for the Breira to take effect on. Then this becomes a total Shabbos event. So the Gemara, I'm sorry?
You have to know what's possible.
Correct. Diyesh Breira, so the Gemara says the following. Amarav Ashi, Hodi Uhu, Velo Hodi Uhu Katani. Therefore, the Mishnah has to be, you have to understand the Mishnah as Hodi Uhu. When is there Breira? When he knew about it on Erev Shabbos. Velo Hodi Uhu, however, if he didn't know about it on Erev Shabbos, that's when Lemaisa, again, if I decided to make an Erev Tchumen on Erev Shabbos, then it works. But if I decide on Shabbos, it will not work. Amarav Asi, Katan Ben Shesh, Yotze Be'erev. Yotze Be'erev Yimon. Vas comes along and says, a child who's 6 years old. Well, there's another interesting discussion. What do you do with children in Erevin? So the Gemara says that a child who is 6 years old, not talking about carrying a child right now. We're just talking about mobility. Mobility. So I have a child who's 6 years old, Yotze be'erev imo. He goes out with the Erev of his mother. And I will say, we're not going to get into this now, but there's a whole discussion about what Ben Sheish means. Does Ben Sheish mean 6 years old into the sixth year? Well, I'm just going to go with 6 years old for now. So you have a six-year-old child is yotze with the Erev of his mother. Meis, v'esmei reis z'kasha. Katosh, that's arach li'imo. If you have a child who requires his mother, yotze be'erev imo. then, let's say the child is dependent on his mother, then he's yotzi with the eruv of his mother. V'she'ein tzarech l'imo, but if he doesn't need his mother, ein yotzi ve'eruv imo. Also, which means, what does it mean, ein yotzi? Mean you'd have to make him a separate eruv. You have to make him, he'd have to go ahead and be a part of an eruv. And if he doesn't need his mother, he don't see what the eruv of his mother. Utnan nami gabi sukkah. We see the same concept by sukkah. Ki agavna katan shein tzarech l'imo chayiv b'sukkah. If a child doesn't need his mother, he's chayiv b'sukkah. V'habinan ba. And Rabbi said, we ask about this. Ve'ezu katan shein tzarech l'imo. What is the definition of a katan who doesn't need his mother? Amri debe Rabbi Yanai kol shenifne ve'ein imo makan chasal. So Rabbi Rabbi Yanai said, anytime that a child goes to the bathroom and doesn't require its mother to clean it up. Right? So at that point in time, that's considered to be a child that is somewhat, obviously when we say it doesn't need its mother, it doesn't mean there's no dependency. What it means is that the child has exhibited some degree of independence. Rav Shimon Lakish, or Rav Shimon Lakish says, kol sheneir ve'eino kore ima ima. This is interesting. Rav Shimon Lakish says, when is a child considered not to need its mother? When it wakes up and doesn't cry out, ima ima. So look at the Gemara, this is so fascinating. Sagadaitcha gidolim nami karu. But there are some very old children who still, when they wake up, cry out, "Mami, mami, ima, ima." So says the Gemara, "Ela ima, kol sheneir mishenasa ve'ino kari ima, ima." So also listen to this. What it means, therefore, the Gemara means is what it means is there are two types of things you call ima, ima. When you call ima, ima, and you don't stop calling ima, ima until ima comes. Right? That's called the child that's dependent on its mother. As opposed to if you call out ima, ima, and if ima comes, great, and if ima doesn't come, so you figure out how to move on, that's called the katan she'eino tzarech l'imo. V'kama, and how also, again, we'll say, up until this point, the Gemara is giving almost like behavioral metrics. The child could go to the bathroom and doesn't need his mother to clean it up, or the child calls ima, ima, and even if the mother doesn't come, the child doesn't keep calling. But how, approximately, how old is this child? So they become a kvar arba, kvar chamish, 4 or 5 years old. 4 or 5 years old. So Amar Rabbi Yoshua Bar Yochai, so now again, so you see the stira. So on one hand, again, on one hand, you had Rav Asi who said that it's a child 6 years old, right? 6 years old, that ultimately, even a 6 year old is still dependent on its mother. And now the Gemara seems to say that you have Rabbi Yanai and Reish Lakish, which seems to indicate that even 4 or 5 years old is already an independent child. So which one is it? Amar Rabbi Yoshua Bar Yochai Idi. Kikam Rav Asi. When did Rav Asi say 6 years old? Kigain kigon she'irev alav aviv letzafon v'imo ledoro. We'll say this is a different kind of case. This is, let's say, where the child's father made an eruv for the child to the north, and the mother made an eruv to the south. So now, what's the shaila? The shaila is you can't have both. You can't have both those eruvim. So where do we put the kid? Where do we put the kid? To which the Gemara says, da'afilu bar shesh nami bitzavsa di'imei nechalei. And therefore, what Rav Asi is saying is, even a child who's 6 years old, who pretty much is independent, such a times of the Gemara, who pretty much is independent, still we assume that what? Even a child of 6 years old prefers the company of his mother more than his father. Therefore, Lemaisa, in that case where the parents make conflicting Eruvim, will put the child with the Eruv of the mother. Meisvei. So Gemara raises the kasha. Kata shetzarech li'imo, yotzei be'eruv imo, ad ben shesh. Now the Braisa, one quotes the Braisa, that a child that needs its mother goes out with its mother's Eruv until the age of 6. So I'll say again, this clearly indicates that what? That a child is considered to be dependent on his mother at least until 6. Tiyufta d'Rav Yoshua Bar Idi. Tiyufta. So we'll say this seems to refute the position of Rabbi Yoshua Bar Idi. Because remember what the Rabbi Yoshua Bar Idi said. Rabbi Yoshua Bar Idi was the one who said, Kol Shenifna Ve'no Ima Makan Chas, which was 4 or 5. So the Gemara says, but it could also be a refutation of Rav Asi, because I will say, remember, look, what did this price say? This price said, ad ben shesh, until the age of 6. And what did Rav Asi say? Rav Asi said, katan ben shesh. So Rav Asi again, ad ben shesh means up to the age of 6. Ben shesh can mean what? Right? Through the age of 6. So the Gemara says, the founding of Amlech Rav Asi, ad v'ad v'chlal. So Rav Asi says, no, when it says ad ben sheish, ad means what? Up until and including. Lema tehevet yufta d'Rabbi Yanai v'Reish Lakish. So the Gemara says, I butcher, this should also be a refutation to Rabbi Yanai and Reish Lakish. To which the Gemara says, lo kashya, Had ise avua b'masa, had lo ise avua d'masa. What is talking about a case where there's a father in the city? If there's a father in the city, Rabbo said, then the child, again, doesn't have to be fully dependent on the mother. And the other is a situation where there's no father in the city, and therefore the child is fully dependent on the mother, and therefore we need to travel with the mother as well. Tana Rabbanan, Ma'ariv Adam al yedei b'no ubito hakitanim, al yedei avdo v'shifchaso hakananim, bein ledatan, bein shlo ledatan. So also listen to this. Now the Braisa says, a person can make an Eruv for his minor children, or for his non-Jewish servant or maidservant, whether they know about it or they don't know about it. Because we'll say, yeah, well, I can make an Eruv for all of these people even without their consent. Aval inu ma'arev, lo al yedei avdo v'shifchasa ivrim, but I can't make an Eruv, meaning without consent, for my Hebrew servant or maidservant, my Jewish servant or maidservant, v'lo al yedei b'no b'to agdolim, or for my adult children, v'lo al yedei ishto, or for my wife, ela mi da'atam. Rather, we'll say, for all of these people, I need their das. And we'll say, we'll see why. The simple distinction is the people in the first category are considered either like property or like an extension of me. Therefore, in order for me to make even an Erev Tchumen, I do not need their das. In case number two, all of these people are independent, autonomous entities. And therefore, in order for me to make an Erev for them, what do I need? I need their das, I need their consent. Tanya Yidah, bear another braisa. V'lo lo ya'arev adam al yidei b'no ubito hagidolim. A person should not go ahead and make an Erev for his adult children, or for his Jewish servant or maidservant, and for his wife, except with their consent. But he can make an Erev for his non-Jewish servant and maidservant, or for his minor children, with their consent, without their consent. Why? Because their hand is like his hand. And also, just as you said before, because they're an extension of him. V'kulon she'irvu, but listen to this. But in any of these cases, any of these people who made an Eruv, v'irev alehen, so let's say, interestingly enough, but if you have a case where, let's say, they made an Eruv and he made an Eruv, so you have two conflicting Eruvim. Right? Excuse me. V'kulon she'irvu, v'irev alehen rabban, yotzin b'shel rabban. They could go ahead, they could use the Eruv of their master, chutz min ha'isha mipnei she'yachola limchos, with the exception of a woman, because a woman could object. So what's interesting about this is the following. So on one hand, the Braisa tells me that a man can't make an Eruv for his adult children, right, for his Hebrew or Jewish servant and maidservant, and for his wife. But he can make it for his non-Jewish servant and maidservant, his minor children, because they're an extension of himself. But let's say he did make an Eruv for them, and what? And they made their own Eruv. They made their own Eruv, and the two Eruvim are not the same. So in all of those cases, they could rely on the Eruv that the master/father made, with the exception of a wife. So the Gemara says, why is the woman different? So we'll say, here, the Kasha is, I don't understand. You're telling me that in all of these cases, if the man made one Eruv and the other people made a different Eruv, we rely on the Eruv of the master of the Rabban. I will say, that makes sense for us in the case of minor children, and it makes sense for us in the case of a non-Jewish servant or maidservant, because they're extensions of himself. But in the case of adult children, or the case of a Jewish servant or maidservant, then Lemaisa, their Eruv should trump the master's servant. And why is it only the Isha who's mentioned as the person who could go ahead and go with her own Eruv and ignore her husband's Eruv? Amarabba Isha v'chol de damila. Rabbi says, you're right. When it says chutz mi Isha, it doesn't mean just Isha. Rather, it means Isha and anyone like her, meaning all the other people in her category. Amarmar, chutz mina Isha, mipnei shi'achol lelimchos. Furthermore, Mar said, why is the woman excluded? Or why doesn't the woman have to follow her husband's Eruv, but she could follow her own? Because she could object. Taima dimachi. Now, the reason we give her own Eruv and don't subject her to her husband's Eruv is why? Is because she objected. Hastama, but let's suppose that she were not to say anything. Nafka b'debayla. Interestingly enough, apparently the inference from the Bryce is that were she not to say anything, then what? Then she would be yotze with the Eruv of her husband. Hakatani reisha, ela midatam. But yet if you look at the reisha says that in order for them to make an Eruv, they have to have das for it. My love da amri'in. Does it not mean that they actually said yes? Then, in order for the husband/Baal's Eruv to work, they actually have to affirm it. They have to verbally affirm that they are accepting this Eruv. Lo, my elamidatam, the ishtiku. No, what's the case of where they accept the husband's Eruv? Where they say nothing. So also silence is acquiescence. See, even if, so if the husband makes an Eruv and they don't say anything about it, then by definition that means acceptance. La'afuke hecha de amri lo. To exclude the case where what? Where they verbally object. So we'll say again, therefore in a case where let's say the husband made an Eruv and the wife doesn't say anything, or the adult children don't say anything, or the Hebrew servant or maidservant, then in that case they accept it. But if they articulate their objection to it, then of course it's not binding on them. Ha v'kulan she'irvu v'irev alehen rabban yotzin v'shel rabban. Aye, but what about the case where it says that if they made their own Eruv, and the husband slash master made an Eruv for them, that's what? That they could be yotze with the husband slash master's Eruv. Ustomahu, and yet again, that's a case of stam, right? The isha didn't, nobody said any kind of objection. The katani chutz mina isha delo nafki, and yet what did the Braisa say? Everyone is yotze with that Eruv with the exception of the wife. Amarava, kevan di irvu, she irvu, so Rava says, one second, Avosai. When you go ahead and you make your own Eruv, then what? Then that is a clear objection. Meaning, Avosai, essentially there are two ways to object to the husband slash master's Eruv. You could either, number one, what? Actually verbally object. Say, I don't want that. In which case, fine, it's not binding on you. Or what? You could behaviorally object. How do you behaviorally object? You make your own Eruv. And if you make your own Eruv, then even if you don't say anything, the fact that you went down and made your own Eruv is clearly indicative of the fact that what? That your intention is to go ahead and keep with your own Eruv. Says the Mishnah. Kamahu shi'uro. So we'll say now we're talking about the shi'ur still for Eruv. So kamahu shi'uro. Mazon shtei sudos l'chol echad ve'echad. So what is the shi'ur of the Eruv we're discussing? It requires mazon shtei sudos. It requires, ultimately, food for two meals worth. L'chol echad ve'echad. Mizono l'chol. Below the Shabbos. So right, we'll say, so here's what's interesting now. So when we say mazon shtei su'udos of what? Is it two weekday meals or two Shabbos meals? Now I see why this gets interesting in just a moment. So mazon lechol, below the Shabbos of Rav Meir. So Rav Meir holds that it's two weekday meals and not Shabbos meals. Rabbi Huda says, the Shabbos below lechol. No, Shabbos meals and not weekday meals. V'zeh miskavnin lahakel. And everyone is trying to be meikel. I will say, has everyone tried to be meikel? This is interesting. So according to Rabbi Meir, who holds that it's weekday meals, Rabbi Meir holds that people eat more on Shabbos. People eat more on Shabbos. Therefore, by definition, because people eat more on Shabbos, better to measure the two-meal requirement by weekday meals. Rabbi Huda, on the other hand, actually says people eat less on Shabbos. Why? Because since on Shabbos you have shalosh su'udos, right? You have to eat three meals over the course of the day. So people what? People pace themselves. So because people pace themselves, they may end up eating. I'm not even going to put it to a vote, right? But people end up eating less. So we'll say the point is everyone is trying to be mekel and make it the smaller meal threshold. V'zev is kavna lahakel. Rabbi Yochanan Baroka Omer. Rabbi Yochanan Baroka says mikikar bepundion midalit se'in b'sela. If you're using bread, so what do you have to use? Mikikar pundion, you have to use a loaf purchased for a pundion. We'll define what all of these things mean. Pundion is a coin. When four sa'a of grain are purchased for a sela. Rabbi Shimon says, shtei yados likikar, mishalosh lakav. So Rabbi Shimon says that it's two-thirds of a loaf in which there are three to a kav. Chetzya lebayis hamenuga. Half of the loaf is for a house with tzaras. The chetzi chetzia lives all sagir. So we'll say, what does this mean? So we'll say, there's an interesting halacha with tzaras. That if you walk into a home that has tzaras, so lemaisa, again, there are two things that happen. If you stay in there long enough, your body, your physical body becomes tameh. And if you stay in there even longer than what? Your clothing becomes tameh. So how long do you have to go ahead and stay in a home with tzaras in order for your clothing to become tameh? So the Gemara says, Mishnah says, long enough to eat half a loaf. And how long do you have to stay in there for your body to become tameh? It's less time for the body, a quarter of a loaf. Okay, says the Gemara. The kama mazon shtei sudos. How much food exactly is mazon shtei sudos? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav tarti rifta ikar yasa. Two, literally, Rebbe said, an ikar is a farmer or a peasant. So two farmer's loaves. This must have meant something to them. When the Gemara says something like this, this means this was a loaf that they all understood. So for us, it's meaningless. But right, two farmer's loaves. Rav Ada bar Ava Amar Tarti Rifta Nar Papisa. Two loaves from the city of Papisa, Amar or by the river of Papisa. Amar Rav Yosef. Amar Le Rav Yosef. Le Rav Yosef Reid Rav Avuch. Avuch Kiman Sirolei. Who did your father hold like? Meaning in the Mishnah, did he hold like Rabbi Meir or did he hold like Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Meir Sirolei. He held like Rabbi Meir. Anunami Rabbi Meir Sirolei. He said, I also like Rabbi Meir. Why? Dik Rabbi Yehuda Kashya Hada Amri Inshi Ravcha Lebisma Shchiach. So, interestingly enough, because if you go like Rabbi Yehuda, the popular adage that people say on Shabbos is very difficult, because what do people often say on Shabbos? Rav Chala Bisma Shchiach, literally, there's always room for dessert. Right? That's what people often say. There's always room for dessert on Shabbos. So I'll say, what does that tell you? That indicates to you that what? That people were normally eating more on Shabbos than they were during the week. Therefore, it seems to be that the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda. Right. Ultimately, again, that Rabbi Yehuda, because again, Rabbi Yehuda, excuse me, the halacha follows Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir holds that people eat more on Shabbos, less during the week, and therefore, when measuring the amount of food for two seudos for the Erev, what do we measure based on? We measure based on weekday meals. We'll stop over here for today.